From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Ben Kingsley is one of the greatest names in film acting today. Sir Ben Kingsley, if you will. But the actor born Krishna Banji in North Yorkshire first made his claim on stage with years of Shakespearean drama. You can still hear it, feel it, even now in his latest role in Martin Scorsese's Hugo, which celebrates the birth of film. This hour on Point, Sir Ben Kingsley is with us. You can join the conversation. Have you watched him since Gandhi? Watched him as mobster, warlord, Holocaust survivor, seen him bring the joy and sorrow of early filmmaking to screen in Hugo. What's your question for Sir Ben? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is acting legend Sir Ben Kingsley. Oscar and Golden Globe winner, made his name in film with Richard Attenborough's 1982 Gandhi. He's played the vicious Cockney gangster in Sexy Beast, the sad Iranian father in House of Sand and Fog, led the Jews of Krakow in Schindler's List, and ran the mysterious Shutter Island. Now he's at the center of Martin Scorsese's marvelous Hugo, where he plays the visionary turn-of-the-century filmmaker Georges Méliès in Paris. Ben Kingsley, Sir Ben, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you.
I'm pretty overwhelmed by that introduction, Tom.
Oh, good.
I'm just
speechless,
stunned.
We doubt
stunned
it.
stunned and humbled.
All right, stunned and humbled.
I am, Tom.
May you be then. Hey, there's a lot we want to ask you about, but may I just ask first about acting for 3D film? I wonder if you ever imagined back in your youth when 3D was pretty cheesy, like sci-fi movie stuff, that and then later as a Shakespearean actor and as Gandhi and all that you would ever even act in a 3D film. What's it like?
Well, it's a 3D film by Martin Scorsese, and I'm sure that's going to set it apart from the normal experience. Also, Tom, we did film in 3D. It's not that it was altered afterwards. We had a massive 3D camera, which is the size of an elephant, you know, and you can't ignore its presence in the room. And Marty was also working, as you know, with the 3D devices for the first time. Therefore, we were with Marty taking his first steps in something. And now, to be with Marty discovering something, playing with a new toy, inventing, pursing his lips and tapping his mouth with his index finger as he does, and frowning and looking through those massive spectacles, is really thrilling. I preface my answer by Marty's presence on the set, by his exploring of the 3D medium and his boundless energy and curiosity. Now, it does, it does affect the acting. With a normal camera, when one is in close-up, it is better to adopt a more modest form of projection. You don't have to reach out to a massive theater or even to, in a medium shot or a long shot,
it's right there, in front of you, from a distance.
It is very intimate, and therefore you have to employ a certain kind of modesty to rein in your performance, to keep it deeply central, deeply personal, rooted in character, and economic and accurate. So,
and this is with any film camera?
Any film camera, but with the 3D, you have to underact. I don't know quite what that means.
Sort of pull it in even more.
Yeah, the camera hates overacting, but the 3D camera just doesn't even like acting. So you have to find a device. Honestly, you have to find a device whereby you're just being. Now, it's very hard to explain to, you know, the young actor listening what I mean, but I'm sure that the young actor listening will sense in their DNA, in their body, what I mean. You just, between action and cut with a 3D camera, it just allows you to behave as that character, which is challenging and exhilarating at the same time.
I mean, do you feel a little paranoid with that elephant-sized 3D camera? You're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what about, you know, how big is my nose, my eyebrow, my goatee, my forefinger? Are they all going to be jutting out into, you know, some hyper over dramatic space there?
Tom, I have to admit that it's the opposite. The larger the camera, the higher the level of attention on me. Mm-hmm. So I'm absolutely delighted. I love being seen and heard. More about that later. But no, yes, I love the presence of a camera. I love the presence of the film set. I am basically a performer, a storyteller. So put me in an empty room with nobody there, and I can't function.
Here's a scene from just a little bit of Martin Scorsese's Hugo. Asa Butterfield plays the young orphan Hugo Cabré. He's accosted by the grumpy toy shop keeper Georges Méliès, the famous filmmaker of that era in hiding, played here by our guest, Sir Ben Kingsley.
Fix it. I know you've been stealing parts from the shop. Might as well use those you haven't stolen yet. You've got a bit of talent.
You've got a bit of talent, and so does Sir Ben Kingsley with us today. I have to say, I love this film. Manolo Dargis, the New York Times, called it an enchantment. I was absolutely enchanted. You know, Paris is so marvelous, that kind of Jules Verne feeling about it. But there you are, this still somber presence in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear in your voice you're not that dour a man. How do you pull it down for that?
I had to play a defeated man, a man who was determined to forget how beautiful life was, to remove himself from mainstream life, to hide in the corner of a railway station, to be anonymous, to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty gave me the opportunity in the film to recreate his magnificence when he was king of his glass castle, when he was directing in his glass studio in his younger years, and therefore I was able to play both the
Joshes
and could appreciate mm-hmm. how much he lost by physically feeling the joy of those scenes that we filmed in the rebuilt studio in London. So yeah, it was. It's quite difficult to play an absence mm-hmm. of life in a man. He was collapsed, but I had to play that absence of life in order to give dear Asa, my rescuer, my little knight.
My
wonderful boy. I had to give him something to pull out of the darkness into mm-hmm. the light.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, in a sense, I was dour, as you rightly say, mm-hmm. and enclosed and shut off, the harder that boy, that actor, had to work lovingly to pull me out of my shell and to pull me back into life. And he succeeds. He does save many lives in the mm-hmm. film. He's like a little saint, really.
We should say, for listeners who haven't seen Hugo, and this is about, it goes back to the early 20th century. It's filmed where this even earlier in the 20th century filmmaker, played by Sir Ben Kingsley. This is Georges Méliès. He had a very early, he was a kind of illusionist or magician, had a very early success in very, very early cinema. And then nobody wanted his kind of old film anymore, and they were all burnt and forgotten. And here he's played late in life, wanting to forget about all that, but it's all drawn back out. You can feel Scorsese's joy in looking back at that birth of cinema. But what about you, Ben Kingsley? I mean, your first big dramatic experience was on stage. Do you share that same obsessive joy in the early years of film?
I went to a very good school called Manchester Grammar School.
Mm.
And when I was a schoolboy, we had a film society.
Yeah.
And we were able to watch, and this would be in the 60s, we were able to watch films that were made at the turn of the century. We watched Eisenstein films, Fritz wow. Lang's films. Mm. We watched amazing films that were even then treasured masterpieces, so that I was totally enthralled by the beginnings of cinema. And then there was a gap, as you know, where mm-hmm. I drifted into Shakespeare and classical theatre, but then revisited cinema with Richard Attenborough. And I do have a modest collection of early films on DVD, and a fascination for the purity, the simplicity, and the utter excitement that must have been around when those first early films, those flickering images, first appeared in the cinema, where, as you know, people ran out of a cinema once when they showed a train mm-hmm. arriving at a station. because they thought the train was going to come off the screen and kill them all.
If some great deity suddenly appeared before you, all-powerful, and required that you, Ben Kingsley, choose stage or screen, your compensation will be the same, but you must choose for eternity. Which?
Film.
Why?
I'm a film producer now. I have five projects. My wife and I have five projects on our slate. I absolutely know as for a fact that the film technique has allowed my acting to take a step that it otherwise could not have taken on stage. I can only describe this again to the young actor listening as a movement from a migration from being a landscape painter to a portrait artist. And now I'm a portrait artist, and I cannot put that brush down. I love it very, very much. I find it thrilling. I find the intimacy of the camera extraordinary. I find what we can do with time and space in cinema absolutely enthralling and magical. It would definitely. I know the god's name. It's Krishna, of course.
Of course.
And I would say Krishna. it's film. And I'm sure he'd a wide smile would spread across his blue face.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with acting great Sir Ben Kingsley of Gandhi fame and Sexy Beast and House of Sand and Fog, now at the heart of Martin Scorsese's Hugo. Here's just a little bit of the climactic scene from the 1982 classic. Richard Attenborough's Gandhi, our guest Sir Ben, in his big breakout role, takes on the British as Mahatma Gandhi. Skeptical of India's right to independence, to say the least, here's James Cousins as a British brigadier speaking first.
You don't think we're just going to walk out of India?
Yes. In the end, you will walk out. Because 100,000 Englishmen simply cannot control 350 million Indians if those Indians refuse to cooperate. And that is what we intend to achieve. Peaceful, non-violent, non-cooperation. Till you yourself see the wisdom of leaving, Your Excellency.
Ben Kingsley, the 1982 Gandhi. He joins us today from Culver City, California. Ben Kingsley, lots of response online. Richard writes, Ben Kingsley is a genius, pure and simple. House of Sand and Fog stands out. And this question from Facebook from Christopher. Sir Ben, he says, could you ask Mr. Kingsley how he wraps his brain around so many different ethnicities and how he relates those ethnicities to his own? It's quite remarkable. Sir Ben.
I'm not so sure whether I do. It's a lovely question. I'm not so sure whether I do relate them to my own, but I am blessed with a level of curiosity, which I hope has matured into a level of empathy. And I think that's a God-given thing. I don't know whether one can. I think one can acquire empathy if you keep the right company and are persuaded to always see the other guy's point of view, the other guy's struggle. I found this very enlightening in The House of Sand and Fog, which was recently pointed out, and a performance of which I'm fond and to a certain extent proud.
Justly so, yeah.
And I don't honestly know, Tom, whether I'm drawing on my own DNA, but whether I'm more outgoing and more curious about the other than I am digging into myself. However, having said that, I think that if Tom, some wonderful genius, hopefully one of my sons or daughter, were to make a documentary of my life on my death, I think that if you edited together all my performances in a particular way, you would have the journey of my life. I know there's more to come, and there are many more performances to come, but I'm anticipating, Tom, if you see what I mean, at the end of my life, if you made a mosaic, a patchwork quilt of every single part I had played on film.
Well, let me ask you,
and just edit it together in a certain way. That would be me.
That
you'd find
but
me
your
in there.
Your life is in your performances rather than your, I don't know, puttering in your garden or in your marriages or.
My life is in my expression. My life is in my expression. I'm deeply happy with the woman I'm in love with and married to.
Mm-hmm.
I love my children. I do indeed love my garden. I even love cooking, and I'm not bad. But I do know that my body chemistry changes between the words action and cut, and something else kicks in, and it's it's the creative side of me that I have to say, and I know that it would be embraced by everyone that I love. That's the center of my existence.
Our Facebook listener, Christopher, he in that whole question, he also asks about your own ethnicity. How do you think about your own ethnicity? And then maybe, you know, Americans may have the wrong kind of assumptions about how people in different countries and, in, you know, within different quilts of culture and assumption think about that. It seems to me that in your career it's turned out to be a great asset in this kind of globalizing time when we can play many people in many quarters and you have a kind of chameleon quality. But how do you think about the ethnicity sitting beneath that? Or do you?
I don't. Honestly, I've always accepted that I live in my body, in my voice, in my imagination. Ever since I was conscious as a child, I've had a very I think comfortable is such an overused and inappropriate word. I've had a dynamic relationship with me, and I know that I'm a confluence of so many cultures. But if you go back, Tom, if your listeners just go back a few generations, we all are. I'm nothing special. I'm nothing individual. As I say, I think that my connection with Jews is one for which I'm deeply grateful. It does not come from any Jewish DNA in me, which I do have. It happens to come from the simple fact that all my best pals at Manchester Grammar School were the Jewish boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were all my best friends. I found them. I found their family life intact. I found them articulate and curious.
And was it because you're Krishna Banji? Did that predispose you or put you somehow in the cultural setup there in that direction? Or?
I don't know. I think you're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah.
I'm sure that people have wonderful theories which will baffle me. But I've always been me. It's very hard. I'm sorry if I sound as though I'm dodging the question.
Not at all.
I've always been me. I have this boundless curiosity. I do have a sense of, I'm rather fatalistic. I do think I'm here for a reason. The reason's very simple. I'm a storyteller. I know that I am descended from, connected to, the storyteller who sat around the fire with his little tribe let's say, 22,000 years ago, with the saber-toothed tiger prowling the edge of the forest.
Yeah.
They lit a fire outside of their cave, and they sang, and maybe, or they told stories, waiting for that sun to come up again. They had no guarantee it would. This was way before, you know, we knew anything about the universe. And that storyteller is my multiple grandfather. I am descended from that person who had that tribal function to comfort and explain through storytelling. I do feel, rather than my ethnicity, Tom, I do feel profoundly connected with that ancient silhouette, the storyteller.
That role, that silhouette in the campfire. We've got lots of callers for you, Ben Kingsley. If I may, let me just play a little bit more from Gandhi, 1982 here, and then we'll bring them in. And here's a little bit where Alik Padamsi as Muhammad Al-Jinnah and Saeed Jafri as Sardar Vallabhai Patel. They're trying to talk down Gandhi, Ben Kingsley, as he calls for a stop to a potentially violent Indian uprising.
We must end the campaign.
After what they did at the massacre, it's only an eye for an eye.
An eye for an eye only ends up making the whole world blind.
But Gandhiji, do you know the sacrifices people have made? We would never get the same commitment again, ever. The whole of India is on the move.
Yes, but in what direction? If we obtain our freedom by murder and bloodshed, I want no part of it.
Ben Kingsley, 1982 in Gandhi. He joins us today from Culver City, California. Let's get a call from Los Angeles. Tia is calling. Hi, Tia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This year I'm participating in National History Day, and my project is titled Satyagraha, Gandhi's Quiet Revolution. So I watched the movie to prepare for the project, and I enjoyed it a lot. My question for Sir Ben Kingsley is, did he actually have to do some of the things that Gandhi himself did, like live in an ashram for a while or learn to use a spinning wheel, or even go on a fast so he can learn the role of Gandhi better?
Great question. In Satyagraha, right in the middle of it, the sort of the theme, the thinking behind Gandhi. Ben Kingsley, what do you say to young Tia?
What a lovely question, Tia. And also, I love the way you use the word Satyagraha, which actually means truth force. That's how it's translated. The word passive or peaceful doesn't enter into the translation. The force of truth. Mm-hmm. Tom, I was discussing Gandhi with a colleague yesterday, and they were saying that he was probably the most intelligent person of the 20th century, a deeply gifted genius. Mm. Now, that, Taya, was a struggle for me, because I'm not as intelligent as Gandhiji. So between action and cut, I had to pray that my brain cells would multiply and I could somehow meet that magnificent intelligence. However, the script was beautiful. Many of Gandhiji's quotes have been attributed to Jack Briley, the screenwriter, including an eye for an eye and he ends up making the whole world blind. Many people think Gandhi said that. Actually, that's the script. Mm. But he would have echoed that sentiment, that's for sure. During the fast scenes, Tara, I actually stopped eating. I wanted to lower my metabolism to a point that could be a little bit dreamlike and disconnected from my body. The crew, and you can only be as good as the company you keep, Taya. The crew were magnificent in that they whispered and tiptoed around me because I asked not to be removed from the litter, the bed that I was starving on. So they were very gracious and they participated. And as I was saying earlier, it is possible for a crew to participate on an extraordinary level. My greatest triumph in that film, yes, I learned to spin. I know that Gandhiji's record for spinning was 9 hours.
At the spinning wheel, not the gym, but spinning wheel, which was central.
Spinning wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
9 hours with an unbroken thread. Mm-hmm. What extraordinary, transcendental, calm, uninterrupted brain waves does that signify?
You wanted all Indians to do this to break the dependence on British manufactured cloth.
On British cotton, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My record of spinning was 7 minutes. But those 7 minutes I was deeply proud of. And there is a scene between myself and Margaret Bourke White in the movie where I am talking and spinning at the same time. I don't know how. I watch the movie and I think to myself, I don't know how I did that.
You know, so many people
But it released the acting. It was beautiful. It released the acting for me.
So many people watched that film with such fascination because it was the first time that such a bold portrayal had been brought to screen. Of someone who'd been so influential in that century, so many people affected by him. I was ready to drop out of university and instead went to India for a year and studied Gandhi. I tried to figure him out talking with people who had worked with him, but here you were attempting to embody him.
Yes.
You were, 32, 33 years old at that time?
A little older than that, but yes, in my 30s.
How did you figure out the sort of Indian part of it? You're a British guy.
He actually was educated at law school in the United Kingdom.
Yes, and, yes. In South Africa before that, so okay,
yeah.
But...
If you recall from the film, I actually start out as being quite English.
Yeah.
And as I end, I become more and more Indian. My accent changes. In the opening sequences of the film, I have a rather light Indian accent that's more English than Indian. And at the end of the film, there's hardly a trace of my English accent left. I become more Indian than India herself, as Gandhi did. Mm-hmm. He had a great affection for the British, and he was a great conduit for his people, the voice of his people, but he knew his listener. He did understand and know the English sense of fair play, of kindness, of decency, as well as that rather violent streak that also inhabits this small island of ours. Mm. I think, Tom, what also helped me with Gandhi was 15 years of classical theatre, playing in plays like King Lear,
the Royal Shakespeare
Hamlet,
Company.
The Royal Shakespeare Company gave me a love of language, of an ability to link my mental processes with my lungs, because it's a lot to do about breathing, mm-hmm. and the lovely clips you've played from Gandhi, I hear myself saying three or four lines of dialogue on one breath. If you are able to do that, it alters the argument. If you stop to take a breath, mm-hmm. you become interruptible.
You may lose that
audience.
If
you do not pause to take breath, but think in paragraphs and weave that paragraph mm-hmm. into the dialogue, I was coming back to Taya's question, you know, how do you portray intelligence? Say as much as you can on one breath. You sound very intelligent. You sound uninterruptible. You sound as though your thought processes are so alive and accurate that mm-hmm. they go straight from your brain to your voice. These are technical tricks, but my goodness, it took 15 years of classical theatre to get to anywhere near playing Mahatma Gandhi.
To make the indomitable Gandhi. Young Tia in Los Angeles, thank you for that call, and good luck with your history project. Lisa.
Yes, good luck, Tia.
Yes, good luck. Lisa in New Haven, Connecticut. You're on with Sir Ben Kingsley.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question regarding the movie Elegy, which was beautiful and personally very touching.
This was with Penelope Cruz and Ben Kingsley.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I just was wondering, you know, I heard, Ben, I heard you talking about, you know, the storytelling, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, this deep love that your character had for this woman who's struggling with breast cancer, and if there were things in your life that you could relay into that film, and also, I just took my mom to see Hugo last night, and it was amazing, absolutely amazing.
Lovely, Lisa.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Lisa. Elegy, where you've got Penelope Cruz. She's the much younger, beautiful student, and off it goes. What about it, Ben?
Lisa, that's a lovely question. I've never had that level of tragedy in my life. I've only had to explore it as an actor. And again, the depth of loss and tragedy that Shakespeare is brave enough to put on stage, I was acquainted with. I also am very grateful not only to Penelope for the deep trust she placed in me and I in her, but also Isabel Coisset, who directed the film. So, Lisa, in a sense, it was a study in male vulnerability directed by a woman who saw male vulnerability as a kind of asset, something that men should treasure. Very often, men appear on the screen as indomitable heroes with layers of armor instead of skin, and not a lot of brain cells as well. And I think it does a disservice to the male psyche. We are vulnerable. My Kepesh was extremely vulnerable, terrified of intimacy. Again, it's rather like Hugo, the little boy who drags me into the world, mm-hmm. and Penelope's character dragged me out of my terror of intimacy into a commitment that Kepesh, I'm sure, would not have thought possible before he met Penelope. Lovely question, Lisa.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour with acting great Sir Ben Kingsley of Gandhi fame and Sexy Beast and House of Sand and Fog, and now at the heart of Martin Scorsese's Hugo. It's not all Gandhi out there in his long career in film. Earned an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor, taking on this role as a psychotic Cockney criminal, Don Logan, in the 2000 film Sexy Beast. Here's a scene where Logan, Sir Ben Kingsley, bites back at a flight attendant and other passengers as they demand he put out his cigarette on the plane. Just a warning, some of the language used in this scene is graphic.
Your cigarette. You have to put it out.
Cigarette. What? This?
No, I'm not going to put it out.
You must.
What's that?
If you don't, we can't take off.
Well, that's your problem, isn't it? It's your move.
I'm afraid you can't...
No, I'm not going to put it out. You're just going to have to wait till I've finished it. As simple as that.
Why don't you just put the cigarette out?
What's that, Sancho? You want me to cut your hands off, use it as an ashtray? Yeah, I'll put it out, providing you're prepared to let me stub it out on your eyeball. I'll put it out. Agreeable? No.
No Gandhi there. Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast 2000. Well, that's a palate cleanser. I know Gandhi was many years before, but for your fans, put those two back to back and we're on different planets.
I was called bipolar. A journalist called me bipolar.
Called you
because
bipolar.
I was capable. Me, because yeah. I was capable of playing Mahatma Gandhi and Don Logan. So they thought, obviously, this man's sick. But I'm not.
That's
I'm
what acting is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is, actually. It's called pretending, Tom. But I love playing Don Logan. Don Logan is like Iago in Othello. He's the bringer of chaos. And also he harbors pain because he's not loved in the way that he needs to be loved. He's not accepted. Very like Iago in Othello. He's dismissed by Gal's role, Ray Winston's role. Mm-hmm. Dismissed, I mean refused. He so wants to be loved and join in and he keeps on being rejected.
What do you tap to bring that up, if I may? That hardness?
That's a very good question. I realized maybe 1 or 2 days into performing Don and realizing that I had to have an absolute consistency of violence and rage in him. Mm-hmm. Where will that engine come from in Don? And I concluded that he was an abused child who was unhealed and had gone on to abuse others. Because I'm afraid that is what happens. If a child is abused and unhealed, uncomforted, he or she will go on to wreak havoc in other people's lives because that's the only language they understand and it's the only way they can connect. It's their primal vocabulary. It's a scream. And once I accepted the sad fact that Don was an abused child, I cared for him. I cared about him. I understood his pain and it released a lot of rage in my performance because I found the center from whence it came.
I've read you saying that in film acting in particular, you need to find that pole star understanding of the character because the filming is spread out over days and you need that kind of anchor to come back to for your consistency and your presentation of the character.
Absolutely, you do. You need a clear, simple anchor. Either it's a phrase or a gesture. A physical eccentricity, something you do with your body, but you do need an anchor to which one as the actor, and again I'm talking to the young actor listening, you have to have that anchor inside you, and that's your wellspring, and it will never let you down if it's clear and if it's clear and genuine. It will never let you down.
Ben Kingsley is with us. Sue's calling from Boston. Sue, you're on the air with Sir Ben Kingsley.
Hi, Tom. One of my most delighted moments watching television was to see Sir Ben appear on The Sopranos, talking about gangsters and pretending, playing himself. Mm-hmm. And I was just so struck by the economy of the performance, how much was communicated in just looks and uneasiness of being with the gangsters. And I'm just wondering how much of that was really Ben Kingsley and how much of that was just what Ben Kingsley might do in that situation and just how much acting, were you acting like Ben Kingsley, the character?
So remind us, for those who didn't see it, he was on The Sopranos playing himself. They run into him and try and, persuade him to be in some kind of cheesy action film or something.
A slasher movie. Christopher was pitching.
Right. Ben Kingsley, how about it?
Well, Sue, I it was a wonderful opportunity, Sue, for me to satirize myself, and I did as a self portrait, allow a little bit of license. So I hope that I came across far more pompous than I really am, And I tremendously enjoyed being with those guys. They were a delight to be with. It was also my only opportunity to ever work with Lauren Bacall, which I welcomed with open arms. Mm-hmm. But I took it as an opportunity to create a self-portrait that was a little bit self-satirizing and having a bit of a joke against myself and with myself. The gangster element, how would I behave amongst gangsters?
If you weren't Don Logan, if you were just yourself, Ben Kingsley.
I think I'd run away. Mm. I do actually find that level of unpredictable violence and the mindset of the violent criminal very hard to comprehend unless, of course, and here's the paradox, unless I'm playing him. Mm-hmm. And then I can understand, then I find the logic. But anybody who's illogical, unpredictable, and capable of a violence that can come out of nowhere, I find deeply, deeply unnerving. It frightened me as a child because there were unpredictable adults in my childhood that I found it extremely difficult to cope with. And I had to almost zone out, Sue, of my childhood. Mm. Very few childhood memories, in fact. So it was a chance. I've slightly strayed there, Sue, forgive me. But it was a chance in The Sopranos to self-satirize.
Sue, thanks for that. One more right here from Toronto. Deborah's calling. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air with Sir Ben Kingsley.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just calling. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Ben on the set of Bobby Fischer when I was just 26. And we did talk and hang out a bit, and I was this, you know, young artist, and I was just blown away by your interest in other people and that your incredible generosity. And then on top of that, I just found that your sexuality, you were one of the most sexy men I think I probably have ever met. And I just found that complex personality really interesting, and it's been fascinating after only knowing you as Gandhi to, you know, watch Sexy Beast and see all these other possibilities. Just wanted to share that.
Oh, it sounds like all upside for you, and maybe for you as well, Sir Ben Kingsley.
I think Deborah should have her own radio show.
Yes.
And I think she should speak of little else other than me. Yeah. I'm deeply flattered, Deborah. Yeah. And I recall you very fondly. I think that actually where was the question? Because it seemed to me that you were just so appreciative of me that I'm not quite sure what question I'm supposed to address myself to, other than I'm glad you found me alive and well and curious. I'm deeply curious of other human beings. I'm fond of humanity. I'm deeply fond of the human struggle. I see it compassionately. I'm not cynical. I embrace my role as a storyteller vigorously and fondly. And if you have a fond recollection of me, it's because I obviously was curious about Toronto, about my life there, about the work I was doing there, and have very happy memories of that film, Searching for Bobby Fischer, where I had a relationship with a child, rather like Hugo. And again, mm-hmm. rather like Hugo, I was a chess master and not very approachable. Isolated, alone, only lived for chess, was once a great chess champion, failed, and then became a tutor. So there are very interesting parallels there and echoes, Deborah, between, and you've actually triggered a thought in me, some of my most gratifying and releasing and healing experiences, if I may use that word, are the films in which I've been privileged to work with children, because I've been allowed to address the child within me and externalize it and see it in another child on the screen.
I've got a little clip from that, Deborah, Ben Kingsley, and here where you're advising this young chess aspirant. He's refusing to sort of harden himself or to disdain his opponents in order to become like Bobby Fischer, the famous champion. And you're playing here with Bruce Pandolfini, demanding that he toughen up.
Do you know what the word contempt means?
It's
To think of others as being beneath you, to be unworthy of being in the same room with you.
I don't feel that.
Well, you better start, because if you don't think it's a part of winning, you're wrong. You have to have contempt for your opponents. You have to hate them.
But I don't.
There's some hard intergenerational
stuff. What a scene.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, here's a question on Twitter. This is from Tom, and he says, enough with the Gandhi and maybe enough of the sexy stuff, too. He says, ask Ben Kingsley, what, sir, are your deepest, darkest regrets?
You're going to be really disappointed with this answer. Because I believe that everything happens for a reason. And because of that balance I have in my heart about life, I have, and because I've had an opportunity to heal, I have very few, if any, deep, dark regrets. I've forgiven myself. I understand that everything happens for a reason. I know that the difficulties I faced as a child took a lot of healing and working through, but I've managed to hold on to all the areas of my life that are dear to me. They've taken some twists and turns, but as for deep, dark regret, honestly, life's given me an opportunity to balance everything, and now I understand that it had to take its course. Honestly, don't have any deep, dark regrets.
May I ask you about working with Sacha Baron Cohen? In Hugo, he is the sort of cop on the beat in the Paris train station where you are for most of the movie, the sad toy shop proprietor, one-time great filmmaker. He's chasing the little sort of a rapscallion boy around the station. And he's the center of humor in the film. We know him from all kinds of work in this country and yours as well. What was it like to work with him?
Well, Tom, you know that the station inspector and myself, as Georges, have no scenes together other than one tiny fragment of a scene in the railway station where I proudly claim that boy is my own.
Yes.
However, saving him from the inspector. But I did build a great friendship with Sacha. And in fact, the conversation that I was having with a colleague yesterday about Gandhi that I referred to earlier in our lovely interview was indeed with Sacha. Because I was working with him yesterday. We were doing some pickup shots from The Dictator. And I have
He's directing and you're in? What's up with The Dictator?
No, The Dictator, he plays The Dictator and I play his security chief.
Oh,
so
okay.
we have a very close relationship in the film. We're far more of a double act than we ever were in Hugo. And we have a joyful, wonderful, creative relationship. We respond to one another on a very deep but effortless level. He's a mensch, to use a wonderful Jewish word. I have huge respect for him as a great political satirist, commentator, actor, writer, I hope one day also director, producer. He's a joy to work with. And as I say, I've had some of the best conversations with a fellow actor and a fellow creative person ever in my career, with Sacha. And that wonderful conversation I was having about Mahatma Gandhi yesterday was indeed with my friend Sacha Baron Cohen.
So that's The Dictator coming out maybe next year, I guess. Ben Kingsley, Sacha
Baron. It's coming out this year,
this
Tom,
year?
In May.
All
yeah.
right, we'll look for that. Are you also going to be acting again with the young Asa Butterfield who was in Hugo, did I read? Do you have something
you
coming?
Read correctly. I am just about winding up negotiations to be with my young, wonderful co-star Asa in Ender's Game.
This is the sci-fi novel, Orson Scott Card's novel, and Harrison Ford in there as well, is it?
I believe so.
It'll be fun to see you and young Asa again. What a face that kid has. What a set of eyes.
He's a miracle. He's a miracle. He's wonderful, that boy.
Wow. What a privilege to spend the hour with you, Ben Kingsley, on Hugo and all the rest. And we're so glad you spent that time on the stage that you still bring to the film. And something else to see you in 3D with that under acting not to let the camera eat you alive. Any more of that in your future? Is that the way film's going? 3D, is that just it?
I think there are going to be many more because I think Marty's made allowed 3D to turn a very important corner. Tom, it's been a joy. Thank you.
Sir Ben Kingsley in Hugo, and what a film legacy behind him. Joining us today from Culver City, California. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll go out with a little more from Hugo. Terrific music there. Terrific career in Ben Kingsley. Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at On Point Radio. Be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit that like button and you'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your newsfeed. On Point is produced by Julie Jupp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Alex Kingsbury, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell, with help from Medina Roshan and Lucas Scheppner. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Magicien,